Parinibbana Sutta, the Buddha's word on about time.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure and altered ones, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Can we have the lights down a little bit, please?
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be perfect, I think. So, if anyone's got a mobile phone, can they please put it on do not disturb or switch off? So, most people have been here before, so I'll stick to the format that everyone's used to. So I'll give a short talk, then there'll be some meditation, and I'll save a few minutes at the end for questions and answers. It's important when you listen to the Dhamma, the teachings of the Lord Buddha, that you focus your attention on your meditation subject. Because the words of the Buddha will enter into your heart whether you mean them to or whether you don't. provided that you're focused on your meditation subject. Because when you focus on your meditation subject, the mind starts to become calm. And when it's calm, calmness plus the Dhamma go together. They're a good mix. Disturbance and anxiety, anger, frustration, that's not a good match for the Dhamma in terms of listening to it. The Dhamma is certainly its match in terms of overcoming those things, but that's not what I'm referring to here. I'm referring to making your mind a vessel which is suitable for listening to the words of the Buddha. And when you do that, you'll get the most benefit. This is not a scholarly exercise of listening to me talk about some aspect of meditation or talk about some aspect of the Dhamma and you learning that. It's about receiving the meaning of those words. It's not an academic exercise. It's an exercise in life. It's an exercise in goodness, wholesomeness, because that's what the Dhamma is. It teaches love for all beings, as we've just chanted. It teaches to train oneself to be free from the taints that are infused into the minds of most living beings. The traits of greed, anger, delusion. Dhamma is there to provide a way to free oneself from these traits. Dhamma's sole purpose is to free beings from suffering. When the Lord Buddha became enlightened, it's said that he looked around in the world and thought, no one will possibly understand what I've just experienced. No one will know what it's like to be enlightened. It's a waste of my time to teach these people. And then, using his newly developed powers, he scanned the world for beings that perhaps could be open to listening to the Dhamma. And then he realized that these five companions, which had recently abandoned him because he'd left the ascetic life behind and taken the middle path, and by that he ate a bowl of food. That's what really was the difference between the ascetic path and the non-ascetic path, that his previous followers had abandoned him for and criticized him for. He realized that actually they were very close to understanding, very close to awakening. And so he left where he was and went to find them. And their hearts were so well developed that just upon hearing the first words of the first sermon that the Buddha ever preached, they became enlightened. That's how important it is to have your heart set correctly when listening to Dhamma, when listening to the teachings of the Buddha. So I'll give you a moment. Set your citta, set your heart on your own meditation subject. So the purpose of the Dhamma is only one purpose. It's singular. It's not there to make somebody some money. It's not there to be the subject of an examination. Its pure purpose is to to show the way for beings to be free from suffering. It has no other purpose. And anyone who tries to say otherwise is really misrepresenting what the Buddha was taught. So when we look at Dharma in that light, the first thing that comes to mind then is, if it's there to teach us how to be free from suffering, what exactly is suffering and what exactly does the Dharma say about that? Let's take this body. This body is made up of tissues. It's various kinds of tissue, whether it's lung tissue, skin, hair, liver, gut, muscle. Various kinds of tissues. These tissues are made of cells. Each cell has its own function. It may be secreting a hormone. It may be helping in digestion. It may be muscle cells for strength and endurance. Each of those cells is made up of elements. In the old ways, we used to talk about the earth element, the air element, the water element, the fire element. Because before modern science, that's how people looked at the fundamental basic building blocks, as having those qualities. But we know through modern science that these cells are made up of carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, and a whole host of other elements. All of those elements, every last one, was made at the time of the death of some cosmic star somewhere in the cosmos. That's where the elements come from. Even modern science knows that. So what are we? What is this body? It's a bag of stardust. It's a bag of bones is another way of looking at it. But it's a bag of stardust, that's all it is. And yet, we take ownership of this particular bag of stardust. And that's where all our problems start. That's where suffering has its inception. This body, just look at it. When you're born, right from the start, you get told, you're a boy or you're a girl, male or female. This sack of stardust doesn't know that it's a male. This sack of stardust doesn't know it's a female. Then what happens? Your parents name you. They say, your name's Patricia, your name's John, your name's Paul, your name's whatever. But this bag of stardust doesn't know that. Even now, when you call it a name, this bag of stardust doesn't actually know that that's what it's intended to be. But this is the world that it's born into. This is the world that it exists in. It's a world of supposition. You assume that this is a male. You assume that that's a female. You assume that it's got this name or that name or the other name, because that's convention. It's the conventional truth. It's the conventional world. And it's the world that human beings exist in. But it's a world which is full of delusion. We don't see the bag of stardust. We see a person. But then look what happens. This body starts to age. The elements then start to break up. And then what happens? Oh, we get sick. But really, it's just this bag of stardust that's just misbehaving. It's not really misbehaving, that's the way we judge it, because it doesn't do what we want it to, and therein lies the rub. Because therein is where suffering springs. The body will do what the body will do. It's governed by nature. It's governed by events which, to a large extent, we can't control. For example, can you stop your hair from growing? Can you say, hair, stop growing? You can, but the hair won't take any notice of you. It does what it wants to do. Can you tell your nails to stop growing? No, you can, but again, to no effect. When the body gets cold, can you stop it from shivering? When it gets hot, can you stop it from sweating? If you command it, does it do as you tell? No, it doesn't. The delusion is, of course, we do have some control. We have a partial control. When we want to lift our arm, we can. When we want to walk, we can. For most of us, not for everybody. Some people can't lift their arms. Some people can't walk when they want to. So what is it that's actually our body? What is it that is actually us? What is it that we are laying claim to? We have a bag of stardust right in front of us here, telling us what suffering is all about, and yet we don't want to look. The defilements that I spoke about earlier, greed, anger, delusion, of those, delusion is the most sinister. It's always playing tricks on our perception of what we and what this body is. The purpose of meditation is to shine a light on this so that we can actually start to unravel the onion and see what exactly is the real nature of the body. Because when it doesn't perform the way we want it to do, the way we think it should do, we get angry or we say, oh, I'm sick, I'm not well. I'm unhappy. But the body's just following what the natural course of, it's just nature. But it's the attachment to something which we cannot control which causes our suffering. We want the body to perform the way we want it to. We want it to bring us happiness through the senses. We don't like it when it doesn't bring us happiness. We don't want that. So this kind of desire and craving for the body to behave in a certain way causes us suffering. But we put up with that because occasionally through the senses we see things that we like, we hear pleasant sounds, we have nice food that we taste, it's very delicious. And so we think that's the way to pleasure. But that kind of physical pleasure that's generated from the senses is just the flip side of the coin of suffering. You can't have the pleasure without the pain. It's this kind of duality. They're two ends of the same spectrum. What one person's pleasure is another person's pain. And vice versa. So pleasure and pain are not even consistent. But we want to take ownership of the pleasure, but we want to get rid of the pain. But we can't. Because that very same mechanism that attaches us and ties us to those things that we call pleasurable is the same mechanism that ties us to the unpleasurable, the suffering, the pain, the fact that this body gets ill, sick, and dies. And what's worse than that, we compound things even further, because not only do we lay claim to this bag of stardust, and a bag of stardust, I might add, which keeps changing all the time as we eat food, breathe in, breathe out, drinking water, excrete. This bag of stardust changes its elements all the time, but we don't really notice that. But more so than that, we then take ownership of things, of other bags of stardust that are not even part of our body. We say, oh, this is my house. This is my car. This is my partner. These are my children. Me, 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 me. Because that's what we're identifying with. And so if we think about it, if we think this bag of stardust, which is our body, is causing us suffering because of our attachment to it, then we're simply expanding our scope of suffering by taking or trying to take ownership of other bags of stardust, whether they be a house, a car, money, possessions, family. They're just other bags of stardust. And yet we think they're mine. And as soon as we identify with those things, as soon as we become attached to them, then we open up ourselves to a world of suffering, to a world of pain. Because those things are all governed by nature. They're all conditioned phenomena. They rely on something, some cause to work, to behave the way they do. For example, the body can't exist without nutriment, can't exist without food and water. So we keep supporting it each day. We eat each day, we consume. Because that's one of the conditions of its existence. Each day, we breathe in, we breathe out. Without that breath, the body's a corpse. But we have no control over those causes and conditions. And that's the definition of suffering. When we are attached to phenomena which are subject to some cause, then we will experience a pain because we have no control over the cause. Those with a sharp mind, those who've developed their meditation, can take these sorts of subject matter and focus the mind sharply and take apart the body and look at it as being elements, or look at it as being parts, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, skin, teeth. These are all the outward signs of the body. But where can you find a me of mine which we're laying claim to? Where is the I in all of this? Why are we so attached to this bag of stardust? So when you practice meditation, there's really two elements to it. Well, there's probably three. Let's say three. First of all, one has to have some sort of mindfulness so that one can bring one's mind to focus on the very present moment. Then the mind can develop in two directions, one of two directions. You can become calm and peaceful and energetic at the same time, because that's being calm and peaceful stores energy, causes the mind to become sharp. Or you can go down the path of insight. And they go hand in hand, because you need a sharp mind, a powerfully focused mind, to be able to gain insight. And insight, one of the ways to gain insight is to follow the logic that I've just given you. Just to take this body apart, see it for what it is. Where does suffering arise? Where does pain arise? A corpse doesn't feel pain. And yet it's a bag of elements, a bag of stardust, like this body that we're sitting here utilizing now. That's a perfectly valid form of meditation, provided that you keep your mind concentrated on a single stream of investigation. Being calm is one thing, and that can help alleviate short-term some of the suffering that we have, some of the anxieties that we have. But it's not a long-term solution, because the fundamental causes of that suffering are still there. The delusion that underpins the way that we look at the world is still there. It's only when we apply the calmness and the force that's been developed through concentration that we actually can turn our attention to insight. And only then can we unravel the onion and see what the real pith of existence is. So, that's the end of my talk. So now we'll spend some time in silence, focusing our mind on our meditation subject. This time I'm not going to give you a meditation subject. I want you to just stick with what you know. you try and bring your mind to become concentrated. Sometimes you'll be disturbed. Your mind will wander. It wanders for a reason. And there are basically five kinds of reasons, five groups of things which cause the mind to wander. The first of these is an interest in the senses. You hear something that disturbs you. You feel something that disturbs you. This is all sensory information. And you're trying to withdraw from the senses and focus them all on one meditation subject. So when the mind goes out and mindfulness is lost, then you're disturbed. But when mindfulness is regained, I just want you to make note of what it was that disturbed you. What is it that was the hindrance to your meditation? The second is frustration and anger, upset about something. You're frustrated, your meditation's not going as well as it might do. Or your aspects of your life are not going the way that you want them to, so your thoughts are going through your head. And you're frustrated, or even angry. Again, make a note. The third is sloth and torpor. You're drowsy, your mind's not alert, so you're nodding off to sleep. So you have to redouble your effort. Bring your mind to a gross form of meditation. Something that is more tangible than the subtlety that you may be trying to focus on, in order to try and waken the mind again. The fourth category is worry. Oh, did I lock the house before I left? Oh, what's my partner doing? Oh, whole range of issues that can prey on your mind. Worry. Again, if your mind is distracted, make a note of what's distracted it and bring it back to the meditation subject. And the fifth is doubt. Does this really work? Can I ever become calm? Am I wasting my time? Delusion. Because we know that if you apply yourself, as others have done who've gone before, then these techniques work. So again, make a note and bring your mind back to the meditation subject. And when you start to put a label on all these things, when you start to have some insight into what these distractions are, then you'll find that they start to hide away. They don't want you knowing them too well, just in case you get rid of them. So you start to become a master of your meditation session. So you start to become calm. And some of the benefits then start to accrue. As well as accruing peace, you accrue knowledge, because you're now starting to understand some of the adversaries that you have when you sit in meditation. And then you can become up to the challenge. As the session starts to come to an end, just feel calm and relaxation which you've generated through your practice. Feel it pass right through your whole body. As you breathe in, feel that energy start to be focused. And as you breathe out, feel it going out through your body, through your limbs, through your head, permeating all around. In, feel that energy coming in, out, feel it all flowing through your limbs. Feel that relaxation. Feel that stillness that's still there. And slowly bring your mind out of your meditation subject. That we've concluded the first two sections, my talk, the meditation. Now it's a little bit of time left for any questions and answers or any topic that you want to talk about. Feel free to ask. So everything went splendidly well and no one's got any questions at all.
Just the usual pepper with my monkey mind.
Ah, your monkey mind. Well, you see, that's what I said. You have five types of hindrances. And when your mind is a monkey mind, then it's toying and it's playing with them. Sometimes it can be one hindrance, sometimes it can be another. But the challenge is to actually understand them. And to actually focus your mind on the hindrances is a meditation subject in its own right. It's part of what we call Dhamma, Satipatthana. It's a focus on Dhamma. Mm-hmm. And that is a Dhamma, it's a teaching. The five hindrances. So when it's almost a battle. Not everybody's the same when they meditate, but you can almost look at it as a battle, as a fight, mm-hmm. and a strategy. And the hindrances have almost got a personality of their own, and they know just how to manipulate you, and you know, because they've done it for such a long time. So you've got to get smart. The only way you can overcome their experiences is you becoming smart, you becoming wise. So, and part of becoming wise is understanding your enemy. So when you become distracted, can of worms, meditation, you do it one worm at a time, you one monkey at a time. So you understand how that monkey plays the game, and then you. And then you come and attack the next one, so you understand how that monkey plays the game. And eventually, the monkeys start to hide, because they don't actually want you knowing all their tricks. Mm-hmm. So it's important that you have mindfulness, so that you are aware that the mind has been distracted, aware of the nature of that distraction, and then bring the mind back to the meditation subject again, until you're disturbed again. And then you go through the same process. Not unusual.
Okay, thank you.
I might add, I've been meditating for over 50 years. So I was 16 when I first became a Buddhist. And I've studied with some of the best teachers that there have ever been in overseas. So I've heard a lot of this before. Yeah, it's a long time.
So the first number one priority is to remain with your particular subject matter you pick for that session.
Yeah. And
keep coming back to that.
Yes, that's right. So you keep returning to your meditation subject. And it's important to find a meditation subject that agrees with your personality too. Not every meditation subject's designed for every person. But that doesn't mean to say that you keep trying. One day you try one, then another day you try another, because that's like that's the analogy of someone who wants to put a plant in the garden, and they find a spot for it, and then they dig and they think, no, it'll probably be better somewhere else, so they go and dig somewhere else, and probably wouldn't be there either. So they go digging around, and all that they're left with is a pile of holes, and none of them have got the plant in it, because they never got round to planting it. All they did was dig holes. So when you practice meditation, you can try different methods when you first start, but then when you find something that's suitable, then stick with it. But occasionally you might want to change, just to give you a bit of variety and to keep you interested. There's nothing wrong with that. But you shouldn't go thinking, well, one day I'll do metta and wish everybody well, then the next time I'll do anapanasati and watch the breath, and then the next time I'll meditate on death, and the next time I'll meditate on parts of the body, the next time. So, you know, that's not the way to go. The way to go is to try and be... one that suits you, one that you feel comfortable with, one that you can get some results with.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of the dead,
may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile,
may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the three qualities and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize the Dharma in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and disillusion be dispelled.
Over to you, Tola.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Good, thank you. Thank you. Thank you all for coming.